Today on this episode of The Drop.
Song meaning doesn't belong to the artist once it comes out of their mouth. Not to sound too artsy with that, but you know, if it didn't mean something idiosyncratically to the listener, I wouldn't have a job.
After a long day at the office, gather the family around for something worth listening to.
The Drop. Now, here's the host of The Drop, Dan Portnoy.
Welcome to the show. My name's Dan. Glad you're here. Today is a big show. Why? Because William Fitzsimmons is going to be on the show, and he is a big favorite of mine. I think with William Fitzsimmons fans, the fun part is they've really drank the Kool-Aid. Because I don't know anybody that says, William Fitzsimmons is okay. They're like, he's incredible! And he is really great, and I'm really excited to have him on the show today. The neat part about getting to know William and his music is that I actually heard about it for the first time at The Drop. Corey Palermo had posted some stuff about him and his music and what's going on. I immediately checked it out because I thought, hey, that's pretty decent. I can trust Corey's judgment. And went and checked out his site, downloaded his album immediately, and bought both albums that he has out, which has been an incredible time. And they are heartbreaking, but I can't stop them. They're just so great to listen to. He deals with such complex subject matter like divorce and like, you know, brokenheartedness. And it's pretty rough, but at the same time, you can just kind of wrap yourself in it. And that has been a really great thing. So he's going to be on the show today talking to us about that. Stick around. Don't go away. We'll be right back.
Four guys set out with the intention of seeing the people and places of their own backyard.
You're saying you don't have a man crush?
No.
There's not like a guy that's like, that is, and by guy, I mean like, that's a man's man. Like, that is a man.
Some sort of epic hero.
That's man crush.
A weekend trip in which the journey is the destination.
This trip is precisely about that. Try something new.
300 miles of open road, from backyard barbecue to indie pop, from the Speedway to the Blue Ridge Mountains.
Where the heck are we?
The adventure.
Someone named Juan is smart. Someone named Dan, not as much.
Starts now.
After spending all that time in the sun, these guys got meatloaf and gravy.
Superhero Pictures with Abandoned Films and Portnoy Media Group present The Great American Road Trip.
I was at a place once that had fine dining and bowling. This place had fine dining and hairnets.
www.thegreatamericanroadtrip.net. That's www.thegreatamericanroadtrip.net. Welcome back to The Drop. Now, here's Dan Portnoy with William Fitzsimmons.
William Fitzsimmons, star of stage and screen, with us on The Drop. William, welcome to the show.
Thank you very much. Glad to be here.
Well, let's talk about your most recent albums. You're now all over iTunes, and people are getting to know you by the thousands as you've been traveling like a beast for the last, 7 years, 12 years, most of your life. What is it that you would say is so different? People got to know you a lot through Passion Play was the big standout track on the last album. What is it that people are latching onto a lot in this new album?
I think probably the biggest difference was that I didn't do this one completely by myself. You know, the first record was kind of the classic, lock yourself in the closet just for, you know, a month and just kind of rip it out. I played all the instruments and all that stuff. And for the newest one, I had many, many people come in, and I still did all the production and the writing and everything, but, you know, I had a couple different singers and all sorts of different stuff, you know, keyboard player, cellist, trumpet player, stuff like that. So I think it was the inclusion of more people kind of into the whole project.
Is there a track, though, that people are saying, when I listen to this song, this is what it, and it just keeps repeating, like, as you travel from show to show, that they're saying, this really impacted me, or I really was at a certain point, and I really like this track?
Yeah, I think it's funny. You never quite know which one people are gonna hook on to because it's different for you, you know, when you're writing them. But I think everything has changed. I think it's the third track on the record. I think that's the one that seems to be the standout, and that when I play it live, that's the one that people after the show, they'll come up and say that, you know, that really kind of hit me hard. And so I think more than anything, that has the biggest effect. I really don't know why, but that's the one.
Yeah, that's got to be kind of weird as a singer songwriter from that perspective, that people do build in their filter as they listen to it. And it means totally different things than it started. Mm-hmm. Do you find that frustrating ever?
No, actually, I enjoy that. I love it, actually, because it's a, you know, there's like a gestalt that takes place with music. People will write me, you know, messages, and they'll always ask about, like, you know, what this means, and they want to know, like, the real meaning, you know, to the song. And it might be kind of a an arrogant answer to suggest that, you know, to not tell them exactly what it is. I mean, I'm willing to tell people if they're genuinely interested and I think it's not too much information or something, but but more so, I think song meaning doesn't belong to the artist once it comes out of their mouth. Not to sound too artsy with that, but you know, if it didn't mean something idiosyncratically to the listener, I wouldn't have a job. I mean, you know what I mean? If it was only related to what I'm going through, then, you know, nobody would care. It wouldn't be relevant. So I think it's people's personal meaning that they bring to it that helps them latch onto it and take it to somewhere else.
With a recent album, you've got this great theme through your music that is so very sad. Where does that come from? Is that like a caricature of yourself? Because, I mean, you don't strike me as a very depressed kind of guy and really down in the mouth kind of thing, but that music is just, it's so, well, close to home in a lot of ways. And so it's definitely coming from somewhere. So where is that place and how do you tap into it?
It's all made up, the entire thing. No, it's not. That'd be terrible. That'd be very manipulative. No, it's very personal. I like to think there's two kinds of, I won't go off on too many diatribes, but I think there's two kinds of writers. There's externally focused and there's internally focused. And I'm 100% on the internally focused kind. I don't really know how to write songs about, you know, like protest songs. I don't write, you know, Dylan-esque folk ballads and things like that about, you know, the government or, you know, some social injustice or something like that. All I know is kind of a personal experience frame of reference. I've done perspective writing where you're compelled by a story that you hear, a person or something. But for the most part, it's I'd say it's like 95%, you know, real lived experience. And people often do get confused because I think, you know, when they meet me and they, even on stage, you know, when I play live, I like to have a good time and there's no need to make it any heavier than it already is. So no, I wouldn't say that I'm particularly depressed. I like to think that I'm hopefully honest at best, you know, and you know, it's important to talk about the sad stuff sometimes too. So.
What would you say? Because a lot of guys are, you know, they, anybody who grabs a guitar says, I'm a singer-songwriter and I'm going to just keep doing whatever and I'm going to get out there. And do you have any advice for those to really hone their craft kind of thing as opposed to just, you know, okay, I'm going to play an open mic night and I'll see what happens, but to really, really put themselves out there and take it to that next level?
Yeah, that's a really good question. I think it's, and that's another one that, you know, people would ask me and they ask, you know, friends of mine and things like that. And the real thing is if I had the answer to that, I'd be doing it myself and I probably wouldn't tell anybody. But I mean, we're, you know, we're all trying to get to that next level. But I think more than anything, I kind of avoided trying to do anything with it for a long time. Not to be cool. I just didn't think I really, there was a chance. I had different career aspirations and things like that. So honestly, for, you know, 10, 12 years or so, I played, you know, for fun. I just did a lot of cover songs and just kind of learned how other people did music and everything. And I didn't really start writing until, I've been writing for, you know, a few years now. I didn't just start or anything, but I kind of avoided trying to, you know, go out and play shows and really get people to like it until I sort of kind of knew what I was doing on the instrument and in writing, if that makes sense.
You've been doing a lot of touring with and promoting Ingrid Michaelson. Mm-hmm. Tell me about your relationship with her and what, how did you guys meet and how did it, you know, just because it seems real symbiotic mm-hmm. kind of thing. And obviously you're a big fan of her right. stuff as well. So if you can let us in on that.
Yeah. Well, Ingrid, she certainly doesn't need my help with promotion. She's crushing me at the moment. She's doing fantastic and she deserves it too. We're friends. She's a pretty amazing girl. We met on the internet like everybody does anymore. I'm always quick to remind people that she found my music first and was a fan. But I think it only lasted for like 5 minutes until I listened to her sing, and then I was done. It was great. So I was actually just looking at some old emails and stuff, kind of from the first like couple weeks that we started talking, and it was just really a mutual, I think, respect and admiration for what each was doing. And after a while, somewhere in there, we started talking about, you know, hey, it'd be really neat if you sang on my album, and we should do that someday. And kind of one thing, I don't know if we were both serious in the beginning, but it turned out that we did it. She came out and she sang on, I think, about half of my newer record and did amazing. And, you know, I've gone on a couple tours with her. And so it's really, it's a friendship and it's a, you know, it's a kind of a partnership in music. We just really, I think, like what each other's doing and kind of want to be a part of it.
Now, you are running in league with these up-and-coming singer-songwriter guys, Josh Radin, the Carey Brothers, the whole bunch, and it's fantastic. It's so great. And you guys seem to be linked by Mr. Braff. I don't know if that's how it all came together or you guys hooked up prior to talking with Zach, but how did that all go about? And did Zach Braff talk with you directly to start it, or did you say, hey, I really dig this and come on, check out stuff? Or
I think the first thing that I would want to say is that, I mean, these guys are all, you know, Zach included, Josh Radin and Skylar Fisk and Carey Brothers and, you know, the whole lot of them. I mean, these were heroes of mine. I mean, I'm talking not even, I mean, these are people that I was like admiring and would have killed to, you know, just like see a live show. You know, I mean, they're all, you know, really amazing. And at some point, you know, I played a show in LA a while back, you know, kind of word of mouth, a friend of a friend, you know, I think a couple people that knew some people came to that show, and you know, I kind of had the blessing of my name sort of being passed around to some of those people. And yeah, I guess maybe one of the last times I was out in LA, I think a couple, you know, Zach Braff and Josh Radin, some of those guys actually came to the show, and I got to meet them afterwards. And I mean, that's like dream come true kind of stuff for me. I was, you know, I've been watching Scrubs for years, and I mean, I've been, you know, just like everybody else, you know. So I was pretty kind of starstruck by the whole thing. And yeah, so it's really been, I honestly don't know how it all came about specifically. I don't really know the whole backstory, but to me, it's like a huge honor to be even, you know, be able to play these shows with Carey and to get to, you know, talk, get advice from these guys. They're kind of like mentors in a way at this point. But if there is a real definite story to it, I honestly don't know it. I'd love if somebody told me, but I feel extremely lucky to even, you know, kind of be at the bottom of that rung and you know, climbing the same ladder that they're on right now. So
what is it in terms of, like, I mean, you're traveling, you're on tour right now, and you've been on tour for a while. What are some albums that are absolutely essential for you to have? Because there's a lot of that downtime. And what is it that you have to have with you, either via iPod or on CD or that kind of thing, when you're touring? Either classic stuff or new stuff you're just checking out? What's essential?
It's Sufjan Stevens. If I don't have every one of his with me right now, I have just about every single album with me. You got to have him. Iron and Wine is another. They're my favorites. I don't know. We had, I think, listened to some Ben Folds, some good driving music. Nick Drake for the, you know, when you're trying to fall asleep at the wheel. And no, I mean, just, I'm trying to think if there's anything else. No, a lot of that, kind of, a lot of the influence, I guess, even that I like list on my site is kind of this stuff. I really don't get into new music all that well. I kind of get stuck on, I've been listening to Sufjan for like 3 years and I can't stop. I don't know why, I think I'm addicted to it. But Rosie Thomas, that's another one that I absolutely love. Yeah, so it's kind of a rotating group of a very small number of people, I think.
Well, thank you so much for being on the show. I really appreciate it, and have a great show tonight.
Thank you very much.
I decide it's true that you would leave if given half the chance to go, and I'd be left here on my own to find myself in bed, wishing everything that changed would be the same. Changed it with more time.
That's William Fitzsimmons. Big thanks to him for being on the show today. Make sure you check out his music at williamfitzsimmons.com. And it's good, people. It's good. I wouldn't turn you wrong. I promise you that. Yeah, check his stuff out and check him out on tour. He's part of the whole crew with the Zach Braff bunch. And if you do see him on tour with either Ingrid Michaelson or if he's in your town, make sure you check him out, because I fully expect that William Fitzsimmons is going to be the guy that we're all going to say, yeah, I was listening to him about 6 months ago, and he gets on TV and film, and that's going to be a really exciting thing. So check it out, williamfitzsimmons.com. Big thanks to him for being on the show. Big thanks to you for the cast of thousands here at The Drop. Have a good night, and be safe.
You've been listening to The Drop Podcast. For more information about The Drop, visit thedroponline.com. You can learn more about Dan Portnoy by visiting danportnoy.com. The Drop was recorded at Audio Concepts, engineered by Chris Weigel. For more information about Audio Concepts, visit www.audconcepts.com. That's www.oddconcepts.com.